In my previous life, I was a teacher. And for a number of years, I was a head of year. And I remember some of the children for whom I was a head of year better than others. I remember particularly the one that a local primary school head referred to as the knit queen of Maidenhead. There would be a small circle around this little girl in assembly. Nobody wanted to sit next to her in class. Parents wrote letters complaining about their own children's reinfection. And we tried everything as the primary school before us had tried. I wrote to her mother and her father. I sought the advice given from the school nurse. I made an appointment for her mother to come and see the school nurse. And for brief periods, she would be free. And then something would happen and she'd be reinfected and the thing would happen all over again. Isolation can be a terrible thing. Sometimes it's due to circumstances beyond our control. Sometimes it's the result of our own actions, and often it's a combination of the two, circumstances outside our control and our own actions. Sometimes isolation and sharing that isolation can actually draw people together. The family to which this little girl belonged were very close and very loving. But sometimes that isolation can pull people apart and increase the isolation of all members of the family. I remember, sadly, the agoraphobic mother who ended up with two similarly agoraphobic sons. Certainly, adversity, difficult circumstances does draw people together. It often breaks down barriers. For example, barriers of class and so on in a wartime community, or when there is a particular tragedy in a community and people draw together and grieve together. Certainly, in the story that we heard from Luke's Gospel this morning, leprosy had drawn together a group of people who wouldn't otherwise spend any time together at all. Some of those lepers were Jews. At least one, we know, was a Samaritan, not a Jew. And normally, they would have had nothing to do with each other. But the leprosy, their shared isolation because of their leprosy, drew them together. Leprosy had a double effect on its sufferers. It isolated them from the healthy community, even their families, for fear of infection. And it also made them form their own colonies for safety, their safety in numbers, for companionship, for helping each other to find food and keeping each other safe. It forced them too, as a group, to position themselves often near busy thoroughfares in order to be able to receive charity from people passing by. And that's where we find them in this Jesus story, as Jesus and his disciples are heading for a particular village just outside the village at some distance from the road is this is this group of lepers. I don't suppose Jesus was the only person they had called out to for charity, although what they seem to be seeking from him is somewhat different from what they might have been seeking from another passerby. For the Jewish ones amongst this group, their leprosy made them unclean. I expect most of you will be aware, but I'll say it nevertheless, that in Jewish terminology, uncleanness had nothing to do with being unwashed or dirty. It actually had to do with fitness for community socialization, and most particularly, fitness for worship. And there were a number of ways in which you could become unclean. If you touched a dead body, you were deemed to be unclean for 7 days, and there was a lengthy ritual that you had to go through for cleansing. But these lepers, of course, were deemed permanently unclean. And that's one of the reasons why they had to stay at such a distance, even from their families. The Jewish leper, particularly, was not just a social outcast, was a religious outcast too. Normal religious observance involving sacrifice ceased if you were a leper, because worship for the Jewish community was very communal. And therefore, there would have been a barrier between observant Jews and Samaritans, which no longer existed once they became lepers. They could eat and would eat whatever food each other gained and whatever food each other had touched. They couldn't be choosy because the survival of all of them depended upon it. So although in normal, healthy life, no self-respecting, devout Jew, except for Jesus, of course, would have slept under the same roof as a Samaritan or have shared the intimate setting of a meal, among lepers, such interaction and even fellowship was the norm. How sad that when the 10 lepers were healed by Jesus, their division seems to have occurred all over again. The 9 Jewish lepers obeyed Jesus' instructions to set off to the priest to begin the cleansing ritual. But that same ritual which made them clean and once more fit for their own society would separate them from their Samaritan companion once more. But there's also, isn't there, a division in the response to this healing? Only the Samaritan, unacceptable maybe to the Jewish priest for cleansing, has time to see the significance of Jesus' role in this transformation of his life. Like his Jewish companions, he gives glory and praise to God by thanking God, but he also comes back and falls down before Jesus and shows Jesus that great honor that would normally be reserved for God. He recognizes Jesus as God's direct agent and God's representative. And thus he is, we might use the word, saved. His life has been transformed into a new quality through faith in Jesus, as Jesus had been sent by God. For his Jewish companions, their healing, in time ratified by the ritual set down in the book of Leviticus, would have gone back to their original life. not forward, perhaps, into the kingdom of God. But for this Samaritan leper, his life has been changed forever. Well, that's all very well, you're probably thinking. Very interesting, Jackie, but we've heard most of this before. And then, of course, there's the story of Naaman and his struggle to humble himself in order to be healed. That's a familiar one too. But what I want us to reflect briefly on this morning is most particularly what might have happened after that Bible narrative ended. When this Samaritan leper eventually got home, and I have no doubt he had a home and a family to go back to, I wonder what he said to his family and to the people who had known him before his leprosy had forced him out of his home village. Just imagine that for a moment. What's the first thing they might have said to him as they saw him approaching? What's happened? How did you come to be healed? And would his reply have been, I don't really want to talk about it. I just want to put my leprosy behind me and pick up my life as it was before. That's very unlikely in the circumstances. He was thrilled and grateful enough to go back all that way to thank Jesus instead of running straight home. So wouldn't he have wanted to continue voicing praises to God and the praises of Jesus to his family and to his former friends? If you have found a wonder cure for something, wouldn't you want to share it whenever it was necessary? Whenever the opportunity arose? But in talking about Jesus, what does this Samaritan ex-leper actually know about Jesus? Did he and his leper companions know something about Jesus' reputation as a healer? And that's why they called out to him particularly, asking for his pity and hoping and praying that he would be able to do something for them. I think that's probably quite likely. But this Samaritan ex-leper and his Jewish friends wouldn't have known the body of belief that's grown up about Jesus since then. Jesus as the pre-existent Son of God. Jesus whose death on the cross was an inextricable part of God's plan to save the world from the consequences of sin. Jesus' resurrection on the third day after his death being the validation of his mission and his ministry by God and symbolizing and signifying to his followers that we too can rise. Have I lost some of you at this point? Probably. And I'm not surprised. But what that ex-leper was able to talk to his family and his former friends about was his personal encounter with Jesus. His personal experience. Limited in time and space as it might have been, he was on sure ground when he talked about that. You cannot argue with somebody's personal experience. In my former life, when I was a teacher, on those occasions when we would explore Bible passages about Jesus, I would do my best to make it come to life for them. And one day, I don't know why it's always a youngster in the back left-hand corner or the back right-hand corner who puts their hand up, but it often is. One day, a girl put her hand up and she said, You talk about Jesus as though you know him. And I thought, this is it. They're either going to think I'm bonkers or else this is an opportunity sent by God. So I looked her straight in the eye and I said, "Oh," and I said, "I do." And there was silence for a moment. And we had a very interesting conversation for the rest of the lesson. And then I had that same girl who'd made that comment, came to me at the end of the lesson. She said, "Miss," she said, "I'd love to have what you have." But that came out of her observation of the way I talked about Jesus Christ. And I wasn't expounding deep theology. They were only 13. And a lot of them were there on sufferance. RE was not a very popular subject for most youngsters. But nevertheless, out of that one occasion, I would like to think seeds were sown. Think about that leaky bucket this morning. That leaky bucket thought wasn't good enough. The other bucket, the spanking new bright shiny one, thought the leaky bucket was past it and not good enough either. But the little that we can offer, our own experience of Jesus Christ, however limited it may seem to us, may well be the seed that can be sown in somebody else. The thing that prompts them to think a little bit further, to explore a little bit further, to take the next baby step towards coming to faith. So tell your stories. Be like the ex-leper. I wonder what Naaman said to the king when he got home. There's an interesting thought. Did you notice that little girl, that little maidservant who was a captive in the Naaman story? She started that whole train of events going by just sharing her limited experience of her knowledge of this prophet in the land that she had come from. And we can all do that. No one needs to be a great theologian and have all the right answers. I'll let you into a secret. I haven't got all the right answers either. And I'm very suspicious of people who think they have. We don't need to be, all of us, those kinds of high-flying theologians. What we need to be is people who have a relationship with Jesus Christ, and then the opportunities to talk about it just simply and briefly and appropriate will come, I promise you. And they won't be awkward, they'll be natural. I think I'm just going to stop there. Let's just have a moment of quiet reflection.